Well, this time last week, we were answering important questions like, what color is that dress? Oh. This week, we discuss when to take relief pitchers and whether or not you need to own a SPARP, starting pitcher as relief pitcher. More on that in a bit. Welcome to the podcast on Friday, March 6th. I'm Adam Azer with Al Melchior and Scott White. And
doesn't that dress feel like an eternity to go?
Yeah.
Like it was just a one-day phenomenon, and then everybody
there was a
agreed
dress?
To stop talking about
two
it.
I'll give it 2 days. I'll give it
two days?
A two-day window, right. Yeah. Thursday and Friday last week. It was big time. It actually might have been Wednesday. No, it was Thursday and Friday. Happy Friday, guys.
Happy Friday to you, Adam.
We got a lot of strategy.
SPARP discussion going viral.
Oh, yeah, maybe. We'll see if there's a big controversy about it. So email us at fantasybaseball@cbsi.com and put baseball podcast in the subject line. We got a lot of news to get to. We have to fit in, you know, Hunter Pence out 6 to 8 weeks. Yu Darvish, Mike Minor, they are a little injured right now. Matt Harvey was awesome today. We got some Dustin Pedroia news, Jonathan Lucroy, and some fifth starter spot for the Chicago Cubs news as well. So stick around for that. Here's email of the day number one, as we'll get right into our relief pitcher discussion. It's from Kuel, a.k.a. Lamont W. He says, Dear Alan, Lou, and Dave.
Oh, Trammell, Whitaker, and maybe Dave Bergman, who unfortunately had just passed away.
Interesting. I never would have gotten that. Good job, Al.
Oh, I'm not sure I did get it.
Well, good job to be in the ballpark. Kuel says, I take exception to Adam's insistence not to draft two elite closers, especially in head-to-head points leagues. My experience has been that if you do not have a consistent SPARP on your roster, again, that's a starting pitcher who is eligible at relief pitcher like Carlos Carrasco and Alex Wood this year. If you don't have one of those, the best way to counteract those teams that can average more starts due to SPARPs is to have two elite closers that can average between them 40 points each week. Last year I had Chapman and Jensen, and I won my league. I guess probably Kenley Jansen, and I won my league against teams that could field 6 or 7 starters per week. Please discuss.
Well, I feel like another way to counteract it is just to have a better lineup otherwise, and I think that's a little bit safer route to go. It is kind of interesting, though. I mean, part of the argument against elite closers is that, well, we don't really know who the elite closers are going to be. It's kind of like kickers in football, where you could throw all the names out there in any random order, and that's how they'll finish at the end of the year. But I mean, the last few years, the Holland, Chapman, and Kimbrel types have been pretty consistently the best with those insane strikeout rates. So I do feel like they're safer maybe than they have been in the past, and that this strategy is a little more viable now. But I still think it's less of a difference between those guys and like the Joaquin Benoit's of the world than, you know, an Evan Longoria versus whatever third baseman you'd be drafting in the last round or two.
Al, you wanna get in on that?
Well, I think Scott, actually the first thing Scott said was most of the point, which is that this can work, but I think it's just as tough to do this as to try to get one of the few SPARPs that are out there, the really good SPARPs. They're both tricky strategies. So really your best strategy is just have a strong lineup.
And another thing I want to point out about this is Kuel's closers last year were Chapman and Jansen. I don't remember where Jansen was going, but Chapman started the year on the DL and he fell pretty far in drafts. So you didn't take Kimbrel and Holland in rounds 6 and 7 or 7 and 8 or, you know, something like that. So you got really good value for those two guys who ended up being awesome. Jansen took a little while, but then he was awesome. There is a pretty big gap every year between the best guys and then I looked last 3 years, right? The gap between Craig Kimbrel and the number 6 closer. And two of the last 3 years, it was 60 fantasy points or more. Like, it was something like 42 fantasy points 1 year, 62 fantasy points the other year, and like 105 points in Kimbrel's best season. So there's a pretty big gap between just Craig Kimbrel, who wasn't even number one in two of those 3 years. He was number two, and the number 6 reliever in points leagues. But I don't know that I want to invest.
You do have those random K-Rod types. And yeah. Fernando Rodney, right.
A-Rod
was the third best closer in points leagues last year, and he's being drafted as like the 24th best closer now.
Yeah,
so.
I'm just not spending early picks on two closers. I mean, I don't even do it on one closer. And the first point I like to make about closers and when you draft them is that this position, maybe more than any other position, depends on how many teams are in your league and how many closer spots you need to fill. Agree or disagree?
Well, that has a lot to do with it, because the standard head-to-head league, like we're talking about now, we're thinking 12 teams and we're thinking two relief pitcher spots. So just do the math on that. Six guys who are getting saves aren't going to even be rostered, or if they are, it's as a bench guy. So there's not as much urgency to get one of those when you talk about an AL NL only league or a 24-team league. The depth gets cut in half, and suddenly it becomes a very scarce position.
Yeah, and that makes it tough. If you take a strategy where you're not going to emphasize relievers and saves, and then in the middle of the season to try to make it up in the kind of format that Scott was talking about, where you have 24 closers potentially, or fewer really because of SPARPs.
Yeah,
the points league. Then you can pretty much make do with what's on waivers.
Email of the day number two is from Jordan in Salmon Arm, British Columbia. Not Salmon Arm.
Are you sure about that?
No, but
did you YouTube somebody saying it on a broadcast?
No, I have the Bill James Handbook of Canadian cities.
Yeah.
Just a quick relief pitcher strategy question. 16-team head-to-head categories league. Do you prioritize closers at all? As not everyone can have two starting closers. So this continues what I was talking about.
Good segue there, yeah, because this is a counterexample to the one that Scott raised, that I think it is very important to make sure that you get one, if not an elite closer, and it would help to get an elite closer here, but certainly one pretty solid closer.
Like a Mark Melanson type, Zach Britton type, somebody like that.
Yeah.
And I think for me, guys, the number one thing I'm looking for in a closer, obviously, I like Kimbrel and Holland and Chapman more than the other guys, but I want job security. Of course, strikeouts and whip and ERA are important, but I want job security. I want a guy who has some leeway. If he falters, has a bad two-week stretch, the manager's going to stick with him. Like David Robertson, it would take such a horrible stretch of baseball from David Robertson for him to lose that job. They just signed him to a long-term deal. And there aren't that many closers that have that kind of rock-solid job security.
No, there absolutely aren't. And not only the fact that there's a lack of legitimate challengers to Robertson, but there's really no reason to think that he's going to be that bad for that long. I mean, almost every closer is bad for some period, and then they rebound. And that's the thing is, are they going to be given the chance to rebound?
I agree with the assessment about job security, too, because basically a relief pitcher's value mostly comes down to, is he getting saves or isn't he? Even in deeper league, that's mostly the case. You'll find some of the extreme low ERA and whip guys are owned. But if he is getting saves, he's absolutely rosterable. And if he isn't, he's absolutely not. So you don't have that wide swing in value at really any other position.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and for me, that whole thing about job security is obviously more important in leagues that aren't like a 12-team, two relief pitcher spot league, leagues where you're scrambling to find closers off the waiver wire and anybody who's getting any saves is owned. Okay, so let's go into some important questions about closers before we do some news and notes and some draft results. We'll look at the Roto draft and where all the closers went. First important question, which teams have not picked their closer yet?
Well, we got three. We got some team called the Yankees that you may know,
that's
Adam.
Right.
We got the Blue Jays, and then we got the Astros.
I would add a fourth to that list, actually. I don't think the Rays are settled on who they're going to have closing. And even when Jake McGee gets back at the end of April, I don't think it's going to be so clear that he's the guy for saves.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like they're set to start with the committee, but you're right that when McGee comes back, that's maybe when you have a real closer conundrum.
So let's start with the Yankees. What's your best bet? Betances?
I think so.
Yeah, mostly just because he throws right-handed, and left-handers, you'd like to have the leeway to use them as you see fit. So You know, if Andrew Miller went to half a dozen other teams, he would definitely be the closer. I think he's a left-hander who's good enough to overcome that stigma. But with Betances there, I'm betting on Betances.
It's just such a shame because if Betances were the clear-cut closer right now, I mean, he'd probably be, what, a top five closer?
Oh, easily.
Yeah.
I mean,
maybe top two.
Yeah, he's great. The one thing working against him, he had 70 appearances last year. Half of them were for more than an inning. Meanwhile, Andrew Miller had 73 regular season appearances, and only 8 of them were for more than an inning. But I think 4 of his 5 postseason appearances, 4 of his 5 postseason appearances, Andrew Miller, were more than an inning. So I'm sure he's capable of it. It'll be interesting to see what the Yankees do. We'll keep an eye on that situation. Best guess in Toronto.
Jonathan Papelbon.
Is that serious?
I'm not really kidding. Yeah. I mean, it's been rumored that John Gibbons doesn't seem to be that interested in using Cecil as the closer. There were some quotes a day or two ago.
Maybe because he's the left-hander.
Yeah, maybe.
Right. Yeah.
So, you know, could maybe point to Aaron Sanchez, but they might need him in the rotation. So it makes a lot of sense.
Okay.
Papelbon or somebody from outside the organization.
Rafael Soriano still out there.
Yeah.
Guess he's a possibility. But, you know, if I was betting today, I would say Cecil. Because I think he has closer stuff, but like I was saying, Gibbons seems reluctant to do that. So late round closer, if you're drafting today, late round reliever is how I classify Cecil.
Best bet for Tampa Bay before McGee gets back.
I mean, they really do seem to be set on going with the committee.
It's always the case, like, maybe if Joe Maddon was still there, I'd believe it would stay a committee, but I feel like every committee that doesn't have Joe Maddon in charge of it doesn't stay a committee for long. So you got Brad Boxberger with incredible strikeout potential. Kevin Jepsen was great for the Angels last year. Grant Balfour has been a closer before. I think you mentioned him. And I think those are the three main guys.
And Frieri.
Oh, Frieri's there.
Yeah.
Yeah, they got to get him back on track.
Yeah, I would definitely put him in the back of that class. If you pick one, it would be between Jepsen and Boxberger. I'd probably go with Boxberger, but I really, honestly don't really want any of them.
McGee is probably going to be the first Rays reliever drafted, even knowing he's missing a month or so.
Best bet for, ready for this one, the Mets. By May 1st.
By May, well,
I think Bobby Parnell is going to toss Henry Mejia out of that role an inappropriate lunch.
Okay. And best bet for Houston.
They seem to be leaning toward Luke Gregerson. Yeah. That's that's kind of just beat writers talking. I don't know that I've seen anything that firm suggesting that. I think Pat Neshek would probably be better myself, but I'll go with the beat writers on this and say Gregerson with Neshek there to catch him if he falls.
Which closers are injured right now? We do have some. Who's injured right now?
Well, Kenley Jansen would be one of 4 elite closers if not for that broken bone in his foot, right? I think that's the
injury. A growth in his foot.
Growth in his foot, yeah.
Yeah.
Surgery on the foot.
Mm-hmm.
But we're still talking about a pretty early return for him. Some point in April, right? Late April,
possibly
I think.
Possibly May.
Possibly
the worst
May.
Case scenario.
Sounds like a similar timetable to what Aroldis Chapman had after taking a liner off the face last spring. And that seemed like a much scarier thing. And so he was falling to like round 15. Or later in drafts, and obviously the kind of season he had, it's, you know, some people might not even remember he missed that time at the beginning. So I think something similar could happen with Jansen.
We also have Sean Doolittle.
Yep.
Do we know how long Doolittle will be out?
No. A partially torn rotator cuff, they seem optimistic. That sounds like a scary injury, but I remember Jonathan Neese came back from a short absence with that same injury a couple years ago. So, you know, maybe the partially modifier there makes a big difference.
And Jake McGee is hurt as well, and we just talked about that situation. So what round would you guys think about drafting Jansen, Doolittle, and McGee? If you could throw out some numbers right now, when would you draft Jansen, Doolittle, and McGee, if at all? In a let's say, a standard 12-team roto league where most people usually have three closers and every closer is going
to
be owned.
Well, I'm trying to think where I took them in the categories draft that we just did. I'm thinking it was round 9.
For Jansen? Right.
I think it was actually later than that. I'll look it up for you.
Yeah, because maybe he fell. I could see, given the way that closers go, and now that you mentioned Sky, I think maybe it was like round 11. But yeah, I could see probably 9 at the earliest.
It was round 14, Al.
14?
But that was in a 2-closer league, and Adam was suggesting more of a 3-closer league. I was kind of thinking round 9 or 10, actually.
So, okay, so we're
pretty all right, how about Sean Doolittle?
See, because the lack of the timetable does scare me with him, and that's something that could wind up working against me if he comes back sooner. But, yeah, I mean, I'm thinking late teens. I'm really gun-shy about going after Doolittle.
I was going a little more mid-teens. I have him between Fernando Rodney and Glenn Perkins in my rankings. And that seems like kind of an arbitrary spot. But I just knowing he was basically, we were making him out to be a high-end guy before this injury came up. I think he led all relievers in WHIP last year, so a lot of potential there as the A's closer. I guess if it was as a second closer, I might be a little more reluctant than as my third closer.
And Jake McGee, worth drafting?
Yeah, I'm actually more inclined to go after him than Doolittle. I think he actually has similar value, all things being equal, if they were both healthy. And we know what his timeline is supposed to be, and it's not that pessimistic. So I could see going in the mid-teens.
He's the latest one for me, just because it's not so clear to me he is going to close when he gets back. One of those guys takes the job at the beginning of the year, especially since they're all righties and he's the only lefty. I wouldn't be counting on him for saves. I would consider it more of a nice bonus when he gets back.
Which closers may get traded? This is especially important for AL-only and NL-only owners, but also you don't want your closer to get traded because he might become a setup man at his next stop.
Do you mean before opening day?
Papelbon before opening day, obviously.
Yeah.
But before the trade deadline in July, which closers could be on the move?
So the next one that comes to mind would be Joaquin Benoit.
After Papelbon, you mean, right?
Yeah, right, right.
Yeah. Papelbon, the obvious one.
The obvious one. But then after that, the first one I worry about is Benoit, because he isn't a walk year, because he's kind of toggled back and forth between being a closer and a setup man. He's the sort of guy I could see being traded at the deadline for a team that's already got a closer and wants to build some depth. And particularly if the Padres restocking plan doesn't go as well as hoped.
I think that's the prerequisite for him getting traded is they're out of the race, which I don't see happening. I think they're going to be in the race all year, even if they don't quite make it to the playoffs.
Yeah, and kind of a similar situation in terms of the team context. Steve Cishek, who could start to get expensive for the Marlins, and not that they would ever trade a guy just because of contract concerns. But
it doesn't sound like the Marlins at all.
If they're reloading. Doesn't get the desired results, I could see Cishek going.
Any other names you want to add?
There's nobody who's has any major red flags, I feel like. And any team, any closer who's been closing for a while and is pitching for a team that probably isn't going to contend. So I could see Glenn Perkins' name coming up, but that's just kind of reaching out into the darkness and making something to worry about, I guess.
All right, give me some sleepers, breakouts, and busts at the position for 2015. Al, start with a sleeper or two.
I suppose Hector Rondon, probably one of my top sleepers. And I think it is fair to call him a sleeper, because if you look at where he's being ranked in the industry and where he's being drafted in early ADP, I think Rondon's not quite getting his due. And I think some of that is maybe the relative lack of experience compared to the top closers. And some of that may be due to fears about Joe Maddon getting kind of cute with his reliever roles. None of that worries me too much. And Rondon's just was very effective in the second half, especially last year.
Rondon or Perkins?
I'll go Rondon. Perkins proves to be healthy. That might not be a good choice, but the forearm injury that he had late last season really does concern me.
Rondon or Cody Allen?
Cody Allen.
Okay. Yeah. Scott, sleeper, reliever.
I guess to distinguish between sleeper and breakout, I'm going to pick a guy who doesn't have the closer role yet, Ken Giles, who would be the choice to replace Papelbon in Philadelphia if and when, I lean toward when, he gets traded. And I think these numbers speak for themselves. In 44 appearances as a rookie last year, Giles had a 1.18 ERA, a 0.79 whip, and 12.6 strikeouts per nine innings. So we're talking about top five closer potential when that happens.
I want to throw another name out in the same vein. Joaquin Soria. I don't really know what happened to him when he went to Detroit. I feel like they need to fire their bullpen coach. But Joe Nathan is just like, there's no way I'm drafting Joe Nathan this year, and I feel like it's only a matter of time before he loses that job. All right, let's do breakout. Scott, give me a breakout.
Well, I was going to say Joaquin Benoit, actually. He's my biggest choice because he has been a dominant reliever for so long, and he was fine closing in Detroit.
Urban.
Oh, did you say Soria?
I said Soria, yeah.
I heard Benoit. I'm sorry.
Benoit, you're all about Benoit right now. Yeah, Benoit had
I think it's the similarity of the first names. Joaquin versus Joaquin.
I think that was probably it, and the Detroit thing. Yeah, 11 saves and 12 chances for him. He did have the second best whip and second lowest hit rate of his career, but still has been very good. But go ahead. You know what I didn't realize about Benoit? He's 37 years old.
Yeah, he's been around a long time. But, I mean, his last 321 appearances, 2.35 ERA, 0.95 whip, 10.3 strikeouts per nine innings. He did fine for the Tigers a couple years ago. He was great last year. It was one of his best years, actually. There is some health concerns. He had some shoulder issues late last year. And I'll mention the fact that he could be a trade candidate if the Padres aren't in contention. But I think more likely, given that he'll be... He might not be one of the first 25 relievers drafted, and he could end up performing like a top 10 guy.
I take him in every one of our mocks.
Yeah, if you don't, I do.
Yeah, he just keeps falling. I don't know about everyone, but I take him in a lot of our mocks. He keeps falling and falling. All right, so Al, how about a bust?
This is a tough one. I was hoping you'd ask me for more breakouts.
Did you not give a breakout? I'm sorry.
Yeah, I was breakout deprived.
Your turn for a breakout.
All right. It's tough for closers because if somebody's not really displaying the skill set to give them room to break out, they might not be pitching well enough to close in the first place. But two guys that strike me as breakout candidates are Mark Melancon and Zach Britton, because Britton in particular, has really been a great strikeout pitcher. And I think they both have that potential. So they're both pitchers. Melancon is just a step away from really having the whole package because he's got outstanding control, like almost Uehara level control, gets a lot of ground balls. And I think he can be a guy now who also helps you in strikeouts because he has had high swinging strike rates. And the same is true for Britton. And of course, his ground ball rate is absolutely crazy. Last year was 76%. So I think both of those guys can help you in ways that they haven't before this season.
Okay, Al.
Yeah.
Did you want more breakouts or are you ready to answer the difficult questions?
I'll have more breakouts, but I'm also not ready to give you a bust because the guys who I give you somebody like Addison Reed, who I just don't think is very highly valued.
I'll give you some busts and you can tell me yes or no.
Oh, well, you're making it very easy. I like that.
I think that just as a cautionary thing here for people drafting early, Dellin Betances has to be on a potential bust list just because he might not get nearly as many saves as you're hoping. How are you guys going to approach the Betances-Andrew Miller conundrum here?
Well, somebody always takes Betances before I really think about it, so I guess I haven't had to face that dilemma. I actually rank him fourth among relievers as things are now, so I suppose if I'm sticking to my rankings, I could face that at some point. It's just, I think if you're drafting before the Yankees offer some clarity here, you probably should be more cautious than taking him fourth overall. It's a little easier in a roto league because you know he's going to be a reliever if he's a setup man who gets more than 100 strikeouts. And I guess maybe one factor that we haven't really talked about much is I think the two most likely scenarios for the back end of the Yankees bullpen are Betances closing outright or Betances and Miller splitting the duties. I don't really think it's likely that Betances is just never getting saves at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
the sharing is the scenario that scares me.
Still, I mean, a reliever with a mid-1 ERA, sub-1 whip, over more than 100 strikeouts and 20 saves is still going to be awfully valuable.
Only right. In roto, probably.
Yeah, I mean, more so in roto.
Because in the points leagues, you need those 7 points for the save or for a win. And if you're not getting either of those, then
right.
Then
he would be startable in head-to-head, I think, still with those numbers. But roto, he would still be a big-time asset for you.
Yeah. Okay, I'll give you another bust candidate. I'm not sure how I feel about this one. Trevor Rosenthal had a 1.41 whip last year. He might ditch the windup. He struggled against leadoff hitters. And he still got a ton of saves last year, had a respectable 320 ERA, 45 saves. But he had a 110 whip in 2013, so I feel like that could, you know, that could easily be better. Trevor Rosenthal, bust or solid?
I'll lean toward bust on him because just looking at where he's being drafted, I do think that owners who are taking him are taking on a little bit more risk than I would be comfortable with. So, yeah, I think if I have to pick a bust from this closer group, somebody who's actually being valued, Rosenthal is probably the best one.
Yep, I agree. I don't feel confident with Jordan Walden as a replacement because he has his own control issues. So that makes it less likely Rosenthal will bust. But at the same time, I do consider Walden something of a sleeper in NL only leagues.
Okay, how about Koji Uehara, who until he got hurt at the end of last year was you're working on two amazing seasons in a row. Koji Uehara, more likely to, you know, to be great or be a bust?
I'm guessing great. Obviously, there is risk there. And he wasn't terrific today against the Marlins. I don't worry too much about that. But certainly by the end of spring training, I'd like to see him have his typical command.
Yeah, if you put the question that way, is he more likely to be great or more likely to bust? Well, I think he's more likely to be great. I would probably say that about most of these pitchers. But he is one of the so-called, I don't know if safe's the right word, but one of the so-called assured closers, one who's definitely going to close at the start of the year,
right?
Who I don't feel confident about.
You don't feel confident about?
Right.
Because
I think all of these guys, if you're saying is he more likely to bust or not, for any player in baseball, I would say he's most likely to do what he's projected to do. So,
yeah, but he obviously
has... risk is higher for somebody like Uehara than the players being drafted around him.
Okay,
so that makes him a potential bust.
Do you go Uehara or Cishek?
I go Cishek.
I'd go Uehara. I mean, it's probably a situation where I'd be happier getting Cishek if he came a few rounds later.
Yeah, and he might. And for me, guys, this is where I go back to the depth of the league. Maybe I'm overthinking it, but I'd probably go Uehara in a two closer league and Cishek in, you know, a three closer league. How do you guys feel about that?
I get where you're coming from.
Yeah,
I'd probably
sense.
Just go Cishek though.
No, it makes a lot of sense.
Okay. Well, thank you. Let's take a quick break from this and do some injuries, news, and notes. And I want to do this, guys, as quickly as we can so we can talk more about relief pitchers. Hunter Pence out 6 to 8 weeks with a broken arm. That's going to stop the longest active streak of consecutive games played at 383. Scott, I know you blogged about it this morning. Where did you move Pence down to, and when would you suggest drafting him now?
I moved him down from 14th to 22nd in my outfield rankings. I feel like you know, 6 to 8 weeks, opening day, he's going to be 4 weeks into that. So we're talking about a month at most. I'd rather not make too much of it. I think around eight or so is probably appropriate, maybe around seven in roto leagues.
Yu Darvish left his spring training outing with triceps tightness. Al, we'll probably have more news when we come back on Monday, but let's say you're drafting on Saturday over the weekend or right now. What would you do about Yu Darvish?
I'd avoid him. He's already a little scary for me. So the fact that he's got some renewed health issues, I can't see drafting him. I mean, if he fell, you know, to like 20th pitcher off the board or something, I'd take him, but yeah. That's not going to happen.
Well, I kind of wish we had done our starting pitcher preview after I saw Matt Harvey pitch today. I don't want to make too much out of two spring training innings, but he was throwing 99 miles per hour. I don't think it's going to take much for him to move into the elite tier. What do you guys think about Harvey?
Yeah, it was impressive. I may another start or two like that. I might move him up.
I think I already have him 15th, so I don't know that I could move him up much more from there. But yeah, that kind of just reaffirms my optimism.
Mike Miner's going to see Dr. James Andrews. We'll talk more about him maybe next week. How do you feel about Mike Foltynewicz? I hope I'm pronouncing that right. Who I guess could be in the rotation.
Vich?
Foltynewicz.
Yeah.
Who could be in the rotation regardless of Miner's situation, right? But would it, anyway, Scott, talk about the Braves.
Yeah, Mike Miner's super scary right now. But Foltynewicz, because it actually pertains to this podcast, he would be a SPARP since he's only relief pitcher eligible going into the season, but then he would be starting if he was chosen to replace him. Tons of upside, a guy who can hit triple digits with his fastball, but is also wild. I've seen comparisons like Garrett Richards, who also started out his career. Talent was evident how hard he threw, but it took him a while to get it under control. So I would see Foltynewicz, even if he does for sure win the job, which he hasn't yet, I would see him as more of an NL-only guy, but one who everybody should be monitoring just because of the upside.
So he'd be behind a guy like Carlos Martinez?
Yes, for sure.
Okay.
Who also had a great spring debut yesterday. I don't know if you saw that line.
I didn't.
Two perfect innings, three Ks. No walks, obviously, because it was two perfect innings. But walks were an issue for him last year, when regardless of what role he was filling. So it was, I think, 21 of his 28 pitches were for strikes. It's two spring innings, but it's as good of a two spring innings as he could have.
Daniel Murphy was hit by a pitch on his hand today. Dustin Pedroia is feeling better. He has his hand strength back. You can read about that in Scott's blog. Jonathan Lucroy ahead of schedule as he recovers from a hamstring injury, and Lucroy could be ready for opening day, and he fell in our categories draft, I thought, a lot. Where do you guys have him second still?
No, I've got Gattis second in Roto. I do think I've got him second, either him or Mesoraco second in points. I will double-check on that, because I recently moved Mesoraco up when there was the report that Brian Price wanted to have him catch 140 games. But no, I still do have Lucroy just ahead of Mesoraco.
Okay.
In points.
ESPN Chicago reporting that Travis Wood is the front runner for the fifth spot in the Cubs rotation, and Omar Infante is going to have an MRI on his elbow, and we are going to talk more about starting pitchers. So before we break down the draft results in our Roto draft, to SPARP or not to SPARP, how important is it? First of all, let me explain it for you people who are new. Don't understand that format. This is mostly in play with the head-to-head points leagues. It's not in play in roto leagues if you just have nine or however many straight-up pitcher spots. But if you have leagues where you have a certain amount of starting pitcher spots and a certain amount of relief pitcher spots, we do have a number of starting pitchers who are eligible at relief pitcher based on, you know, what they did last year. Carlos Carrasco and Travis Wood are going to be the first two taken in that group, the SPARP, starting pitcher as relief pitcher. Could be a huge advantage for you in the points leagues because they will score a lot more points than your average reliever, and they will be drafted a lot earlier than your average reliever. In the head-to-head categories leagues, it's basically you're just making a decision to have another starter and one less closer.
Mm-hmm.
So let's frame it from the points league standpoint. How important is it to have a SPARP on your team, and who are the guys to target?
I did a little math on this before we came in.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So Alex Wood, who's the top SPARP this year, per start last year, not per appearance, but per start, averaged 16.06 points, head-to-head points, which was roughly equivalent to what Sonny Gray averaged over 33 starts. If Sonny Gray was a reliever last year, he would have been the top reliever by about 60 points.
Whoa.
Which is the difference between David Robertson and like Glenn Perkins last year. So you're talking about a couple tiers difference between number one and number two among relief pitchers. So I think it definitely matters, but I was kind of expecting it to be even more than that, which kind of to me it says the other point that I've kind of started thinking the last couple years, in that it's really only beneficial if it's a good starting pitcher, one you can trust every time out, which Alex Wood is, and Carlos Carrasco is also. It just so happens that this is a year where there's two of those guys. Now, the lower end guys, you might include Pomeranz in there. I feel like he's fairly safe on an every start basis too, but guys like Carlos Martinez, whichever of Sanchez and Daniel Norris wins the Blue Jays' fifth starter spot, Foltynewicz, if he wins the job, those lower-end guys, they would still be valuable, but you would have to choose their spots with them. It would really only be a case of when they're making two starts. That's where really a closer has no chance of touching what a pitcher could do in two starts in a week. On a start-by-start basis, though, I think you would be better off with a closer than those lower-end SPARPs.
You see, Scott, if you had spoken to me before the podcast, that could have been stat of the day number one, because that was a great stat.
Oh, thank you.
That was excellent. Now, I'll make one more point. Yeah, we do have two very good ones at the top of the SPARP group in Carrasco and Wood. But let's take a guy like Carlos Martinez, who has a lot of upside. He was horrible last year, but if he puts it together, I mean, did you see that spring training outing he had? Pretty impressive stuff.
I heard about it somewhere.
You take Carlos Martinez. I mean, I feel like he's worth drafting if you can go to the waiver wire, if you could drop him and just pick up a relief pitcher, or take him as a backup. You know, take two relievers and take Carlos Martinez. Because Carlos Martinez, does he get drafted in our points league drafts right now?
Oh, yeah.
I think
pretty
much exactly the way you're describing, late to reserve rounds.
Yeah, yeah. It's worth the risk. I mean, I remember a couple years ago I took Shelby Miller, and I actually end up reaching for SPARPs a lot.
Yes.
Because I really want them.
I would say the four mixed league relevance, the four must-draft mixed league SPARPs this year are Wood, Carrasco, Drew Pomeranz, and Carlos Martinez. And then those other names I mentioned are guys who you could pick up off the waiver wire later on. One of them I left out, I think, was Kendall Graveman, who's most likely going to be the A's fifth starter, but doesn't have a lot of strikeout potential and is completely unproven at the major league level.
Oh, and Yusmeiro Petit is going to be in that Giants rotation at some point. If not, beginning of the season, right?
Yeah, no, I think that's right. Probably not the beginning of the season. Oh, it depends.
Well, Hudson's, or who's hurt? Who's hurt for them?
Hudson.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah.
There's a slight chance, but yeah, I think eventually Petit will find his way in there.
Yeah, that's probably more for deeper leagues. As Scott was saying, that's not one of those guys that is going to totally outperform normal relievers. So we'll conclude our SPARP discussion with this: when do you draft those guys? Where are they in your rankings? Do you take them ahead of, let's say, Aroldis Chapman or somebody like that? The top two.
Carrasco are my number one and two relievers, and that goes for roto leagues too, even though, as you said, it's not an apples to apples comparison. So that's in a points league, and round five, I'm looking at those guys because it is such a big advantage.
Pomeranz, who do you like better?
Martinez. Who do I like better? I have Wood ranked higher. I think I'll say Wood because he's done it for, you know, he's a lot more proven at this point than Carrasco. But I do feel like Carrasco has more upside, both in terms of just pure stuff and supporting cast.
Yeah, I agree with that comparison of the two. I've got Carrasco ranked higher, and I've got Carrasco as my number one reliever in points leagues. But 1 through 5, Carrasco, Holland, Kimbrel, Chapman, Wood, pretty interchangeable. In fact, the three closers of that group, I mean, it's really a toss-up. So I would toss Carrasco and Wood in with those three and say you could arguably take any one of the five first out of the group.
And Scott, where were you saying you would draft Pomeranz and Martinez?
Probably right around 15 is where I'd look to draft them. And I think it's a great value at that point, especially Pomeranz. I wouldn't look to do it earlier just because I don't feel like you have to look to do it earlier. But I think it'll be one of the best picks you make if you do it then.
Time to look at the Roto draft results, and I took the Sparps out of the equation here. So just true closers in this mix, and some setup men that could become closers, like last pick of the draft was Ken Giles. Craig Kimbrel went with the last pick of round 8, and Greg Holland and Aroldis Chapman went in round 9, and then Kenley Jansen went with the first pick of round 10. So within 14 picks, we have Kimbrel, Holland, Chapman, and Kenley Jansen. It might have been before the Jansen injury. That I'm not sure about.
I am 99% sure of that.
It was. Okay. So what do you think about that order, guys, and where they're taken?
Yeah, well, as I just said, the first three, Kimbrel, Holland, Chapman, I have no problem with any ordering. I mean, I have some very subtle tiebreakers that put Holland ahead of Kimbrel, but I have no issue with this. But it just strikes me as a late time for the elite closer run. You never know what's going to happen in any particular league, because once the first one goes, you know that the next two are going very quickly.
Okay, next up. Oh, well, Kenley Jansen, by the way, on a per-game basis, is he in the class of Kimbrel, Holland, and Chapman?
I think he is.
I agree.
I mean, he's clearly the fourth of those guys, but I think he's closer to them than the guys who come after.
So he's Ringo.
Yeah, I mean, he struggled early last year. First 24 appearances for Jansen, 4.35 ERA. But the last 44, 2-1, 2.01 ERA, 31 saves, whip under 1, 67 strikeouts in 44 and 2/3. All right, next up, David Robertson in round 11. Mark Melancon in round 11. And then Dellin Betances, Zach Britton, and Glenn Perkins in round 12. Robertson, Melancon, Betances, Britton, and Perkins.
That's very scary to me to put Perkins in that group. And he, you know, if he's healthy, then he's probably going to achieve on that level. But you know, there's enough depth here that you don't need to take that risk.
I do think it's kind of strange, though, Melancon and Britton going that close to Robertson when Robertson's a potential 100 strikeout guy. I think Robertson is more likely to graduate to the Kimbrel class than those guys are to Robertson's class. So, you know, it may just be a case of everybody freaking out about relievers at once, but they're in separate tiers to me.
That's what it seems like.
Yeah.
So round 13, Steve Cishek. And that's it for round 13 and round 14. Is he better than Perkins in your mind?
Yes.
Scott?
Yep.
Houston Street in round 15. And then in round 16, we have six relievers. Cody Allen, Drew Storen, Koji Uehara, Jonathan Papelbon, Trevor Rosenthal, and Hector Rondon. Again, seven relievers in rounds 15 and 16. Houston Street, Cody Allen, Drew Storen, Koji Uehara, Jonathan Papelbon, Trevor Rosenthal, and Hector Rondon.
It's curious timing with the big gap between Cishek and Street, because I think they're extremely similar in value.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure why there was a tier break.
I feel like Street falls a lot in our drafts, and this looks like another case of tiers kind of intermingling. With Street being going at the same time as like Papelbon.
Well, I think people are worried maybe with Street about his injury history, but he's only 31 years old, and that makes him older than most of the guys we've talked about, but it doesn't exactly make him old. He's actually younger than Perkins. He's younger than Papelbon. He's a lot younger than Rodney. He's a lot younger than Uehara. And he stayed healthy last year. So are you guys just over the injury risk with Houston Street?
I am because yeah, well, if I was, then I wouldn't be thinking that the gap here is weird. But I'm ready to draft him pretty much on a par with C-Sheck. You know, look, when you're at this point in the closer pool, as Scott said early on in this podcast, I mean, you don't know who's going to emerge as an elite closer and who might fall apart. Mm-hmm. So I feel like there's no more risk in taking Street than pretty much anybody from here on out.
And Street basically was an elite closer last year. He didn't have the strikeout rate, but 1.37 whip. I mean, ERA, not whip. That's 41 saves. Yeah, I mean, that's, you can't go wrong with that.
Well, you know who had an even better ERA and whip than Houston Street?
Who did? Who did that?
Well, he only had 11 saves.
Oh.
You know it yet?
No. Oh, no. Benoit.
Not almost. He also had 11 saves.
East Coast
bias here. Drew Storen.
Ah, yes.
2-1 with a 1.12 ERA, 11 saves and 14 chances, 0.98 whip. Not a lot of strikeouts, though. 46 in 56 and a third for Storen. And he struggled a little bit in his last 10 appearances. He only gave up one run, but he gave up 12 hits and 8 2/3. I don't know if that's really struggling, or I just noticed a lot of hits. But anyway, what do you think about Storen now? It's good that Soriano and Clippert are both out of there for his job security. Do you think he could take the next step as a closer?
Sure. The job security for him is key. And I think the fact that the Nationals brought in Casey Jansen is, it's not something that is going to keep me up at night if I'm a Storen owner. So I think he's got very solid job security. And maybe this is the year where he breaks out as a strikeout pitcher, because he hasn't really done that yet. He's depended pretty heavily on his saves for a lot of his value. So because of that, I think he's at home here in this middle of the road group. But sure, he like a lot of these guys, could break out to a higher tier.
I know you think Papelbon's going to get traded. Do you guys think Papelbon is going to be good this year?
Yeah. I think it'll be fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like he gets written off a lot, but he's still good.
Yeah.
All right, then. Let's move on. Fernando Rodney in round 18. Now, that's a whip killer. Fernando Rodney might get you a lot of saves, but he's going to hurt your whip. What was his whip last year? It was 1.34. That's another thing. You have to adjust your whip standards for relievers. They should be significantly lower than the average starter, I'd say.
Yeah, that's not even a good whip for a starter.
No,
so
it's not. It's not.
That's horrific.
It's horrible. Rodney, Benoit, Neftali Feliz. Not sure we've spoken about him. Brett Cecil, Joe Nathan. So let's look at that group in 18 rounds 18 and 19 here. Rodney, Benoit, Feliz, Cecil, and Nathan.
Well, I think maybe the most underrated of that group, other than Benoit, who I already talked about, is Feliz, because I don't really think there's any threat to his job. Like, it's his job. There's nobody else who's going to steal it from him. And even though coming back from Tommy John surgery, the strikeout rate was down, the velocity was down, the Rangers seemed reluctant to go back to him at first. When they did, he did great. And actually, over his last 8 appearances, I think it was, the velocity came back to close to what it was before the injury. So I think he's going to be fine. And usually he and Reed, Santiago Casilla, they're like 3 of the last named closers drafted, and I usually end up getting Feliz a lot.
You know, if you're in a roto league and you want to go sort of cheap on saves, I think Feliz and Rodney's a really good pairing, because Feliz is probably going to give you a very low whip, but maybe not that many strikeouts, which is where Rodney is actually going to help you out. And both should get a lot of saves.
Yeah, that's a good point. And Joe Nathan, I'm not drafting him at all. How do you guys feel about him?
Yeah, same.
He's going to lose his job.
Yeah. Okay. Santiago Casilla, as recently mentioned by Scott, is the first is the only closer in round 20. Jake McGee in round 21. Addison Reed in round 21. Sean Doolittle in round 21. And then we have Andrew Miller and Ken Giles. So we'll get to them in a second. Casilla, McGee, Reed, Doolittle. Thoughts?
You know, I'm not fine. I'm not fine. I'm actually fine with Casilla and Reed, certainly as third closers. And if I got in a bind, I wouldn't consider it a disaster if one of them was my second closer. Because it's another situation where, I mean, certainly in the case for Reed, I think there's not like a closer in waiting type. Ziegler's done it before, but he's not really like an especially good peripherals guy, and he's old. He's not a long-term solution. So I don't, unless Reed was just terrible, I don't see them switching to Ziegler. So Reed will get his saves. And Casilla, they could go back to Sergio Romo, who was fantastic after he lost the job last year. I do think Romo's a better pitcher, but he's also injury prone. And if Casilla's doing fine in the role, I think the Giants would be inclined to stick with him. And he's a pitch to contact type, so that's always kind of scary for a closer. But you look at his ERAs over the years, they're always low. I think he'll be fine, too.
Two guys who weren't drafted in this draft, Francisco Rodriguez, who didn't have a team at the time, a.k.a. K-Rod. He was the number three closer in points leagues last year. And Luke Regerson. So, you know, I guess we just didn't know what to do with the Astros there. But I think most people would probably take Regerson over Andrew Miller or Ken Giles just because he's more likely to get saves. What do you guys think about K-Rod, Francisco Rodriguez, this season?
Yeah, I'm looking where to slot him in here, and actually, I really have very little interest in K-Rod. I probably would, to be honest, take Giles ahead of him.
Okay.
I just think he's not going to be good. He was not good in the second half last year, and you know, we've at times sort of poo-pooed Jonathan Broxton, but I think he's good enough that if K-Rod's as awful as I think he's going to be, that he's a legitimate successor.
I kind of feel like that's a little strong. K-Rod was often awful in the second half last year. I think his ERA was a little over 4, and it was mostly home runs. Like, the strikeout to walk ratio was still good. I think he's still a better pitcher than Broxton, so I'm not as worried about him losing his job. He's kind of in the Casilla Reed class for me, but I actually like him a little more than both of them, I think.
Okay, last 26 appearances, it was 2-3 with a 4.38 ERA. Yeah. For Francisco Rodriguez. He did give up a ton of home runs, 14 home runs last year. He had a .99 whip, but that was his best since his 2002 rookie season. Seems like you can get him at least a pretty good price if you want to take him in drafts now. All right, so Monday we'll talk about who might lose their jobs and who the next man up would be, and just the whole strategy of, I'll just bid on... basically, of playing the waiver wire for closers, because sometimes I think it's a little bit, people have these ideas that they're just going to be able to fill in saves throughout the season, but sometimes you end up with the White Sox reliever, and one after each one is terrible,
yeah.
Or the Astros reliever, you know, it's like it's not that easy. So we'll talk about that, I guess, on Monday when we review what's going on around baseball over the weekend. There should be plenty to talk about. And I want everybody to go out there and enjoy your weekend, okay? Enjoy your weekend, Al.
Well, you too, Adam.
You don't have that many weekends left before the season starts, so do something. Watch a movie.
All right.
What movie is left on your list?
Yeah, well,
on Al's list?
Both of you, are assigned.
Movie in existence is
both of you are assigned a Rocky movie. Okay.
A Rocky. Okay.
Can we
both start with two since we've seen.
Yeah.
That?
I mean, watch Rocky 2 this weekend, both of you. For goodness sake.
Not gonna skip ahead to 4, are we?
Well, you can skip ahead to 4 after 2 if you want, but no, you
don't
have
like
to
3,
watch
huh?
2. I like 3. It's fine. It's just the last boxing match of Rocky 3 sucks. It's like. It's just so bad. I didn't realize that until I saw it last month, and I was like, wow, that was really terrible.
Well, but since you can't go a day without watching TV, what are your TV watching plans this weekend?
A lot of sports. I'm gonna stream Miami Hurricanes baseball game while I watch a Miami Hurricanes basketball game on TV tomorrow at noon. So that'll be fun. And then I don't know what tonight holds. Tonight might be a Netflix night. We'll see. But thank you for asking.
Anytime.
I'm Adam Azer. That's Al Melchior. Thank you, Al.
Thank you, Adam.
And Scott White. Thank you.
Yep, thank you.
Have a great weekend, everybody. We'll talk to you Monday.
Alrighty.